Thank you. You can approach the podium and begin your argument. And could you perhaps restate your name into the microphone so I'm sure the clerk heard it?
I'm sorry, what?
Your name once more for the record.
Douglas Nill, N-I-L-L.
Thank you. You may proceed.
I wear a hearing aid in my right ear, and I just took it out because they just don't seem to, don't seem to work very well. May it please the court. With me here today in the courtroom is my client, Abdi Hirsi, the face of Arch Language Network, his wife, Amina. They have four children, three boys and a girl. I've pulled their kids behind my boat on tubes. I've heard their laughter. It's a wonderful family, and just, I guess, and I know this court appreciates this with every argument, but behind these briefs are real people and real lives. This is a difficult appeal for me because the normal appellate argument, you know, just like with the preceding case, it involves discussions of precedent, discussions of case law, discussions of what the Minnesota Supreme Court said. How does that apply to the current situation? This case is different. I'm not standing here and arguing case law. I'm arguing the core concept of justice. I'm arguing why we're lawyers. I'm addressing why your honors are on the bench. I'm addressing why we have the rules of civil procedure. And I'm addressing why we have the rules of discovery. The rules of civil procedure do not contemplate that an attorney for one of the parties can threaten witnesses to prevent compliance with a subpoena. The rules of civil procedure, Rule 26, the rules of discovery, do not contemplate discovery only through informants. And that's what we're talking about here today. This case involves a fraud that occurred during the contract. The parties entered into a contract in August of 2007. And it was a contract that was drafted.
Thank you.
It was a contract that was drafted by an attorney at that time for Arch Language Network, for Russell Hastings. But it was a 50-50 revenue split. And it made sense at the time because it was just a little, essentially a startup almost of a company. I think Russell Hastings had purchased some aspect of the business from another owner. But he did not have the connections in the Somali community to expand this interpretive business. So what it is that they provide interpreters, you know, they provide interpreters so that if, like, let's say somebody needs medical care, they go to the hospital, that there's an interpreter provided. The insurance contracts, Blue Cross Blue Shield, would provide interpreters. Medica provide interpreters to facilitate the exchange between the patient and the medical care. And Abdi had connections. He's a charismatic individual. He's very smart. He's entrepreneurial. And so they started up this company that at the time had $500,000 of gross revenue. And over the next, you know, through he worked through December of 2015. And by the time he quit, what we came to learn, I mean, the company was already up to $12.5 million of revenue and expanding. It was a very successful company. They positioned it, they brought it to be one of the top one or two interpretive companies in the state of Minnesota. During that time period, Abdi went around the state. He opened up different outstate offices. and again, between their collaborative efforts, Russell Hastings had the connections to procure the medical insurance contracts. Abdi had the connections to recruit the interpreters and expand the business around the state. And as one of the affidavits I submitted by one of the employees at Arch said, that Abdi was the face of Arch, that everybody in the Somali community, they thought Arch was Abdi Hirsi. And during that time period, that 50-50 revenue split, the first couple of years it occurred, but of course then they were not making much money. But then Mr. Hastings started telling my client that the company was not doing well financially and that Abdi should be patient. Trust me, Abdi, trust me. And Mr. Hersey pushed him, if Abdi pushed Mr. Hastings, then Mr. Hastings would say, look, I'm paying myself the same monthly draw as you. We're in this together. You need to be patient. Well, in fact, that was not true. So the years went by. Arch was growing. Abdi knew, or he had a sense he was growing, and he kept pushing for his 50% revenue share. It never occurred. Finally, December of 2015, he quit. It was not what he envisioned. It is not what he thought he was building. He thought he was building a business, and he was not just an employee. And he retained me, and we filed a lawsuit in May of 2016. I set forth the breach of contract. And getting back to the contract,
Are you challenging summary judgment on the, are you trying, on the contract claim?
I'm challenging every rule that occurred below.
Okay, I was just, when I'm looking at your request for relief, you asked to be able to proceed with a second amendment, amended complaint and discovery. I just wasn't sure in reading your brief whether you were saying
the court
new tort claims that you were unable to bring that you want to pursue, or are you also challenging, excuse me, so we don't talk over each other, are you also challenging that the dismissal of the summary judgment against your client on a contract claim?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And that was, I was addressing the contract. It says that, and that was the court's last ruling after we filed in regard to the dismissal of the tort claims, in regard to the failure to provide discovery, in regard to the interference with the subpoenas, in regard to the finally finding out through an informant that there's another owner of the company and that the Mr. Hastings was using the revenue of the company to buy out the former partner, which was in effect Abdi Hersey's revenue. I filed a petition for writ of mandamus with the Court of Appeals, and after the court, I guess to my disappointment, but understandable, a petition for writ of mandamus is considered an emergency appeal. The court denied the petition, the Supreme Court denied the petition. The very next day, the district court dismissed Abdi's contract, remaining contract claim, which was scheduled for trial just a couple of months, a few months away. But along the way, she also said that the contract was just limited to Blue Plus revenue. And the contract, it said 50% share, and it referred to as set forth in Exhibit A. Exhibit A was a Blue Plus attachment, but as Abdi testified, he said that was just a placeholder. That was just simply to say how the revenue split would occur. And the contract itself did not say that it was limited to Blue Plus, and within the contract, it actually recited about seven or eight other insurance companies and related them to Abdi Hersey. And so clearly the intent of the contract was to apply to a 50% revenue split for all the insurance contracts and not just Blue Plus. Abdi testified, he said, and why would have I spent this 6-7 years just working for 50% share of Blue Plus revenue, the 3,500, his estimation of the interpreters he recruited over the 7-8 years of the contract were used for all the insurance, were used for all the insurance contracts. They weren't just used for Blue Plus.
So that I understand, then your argument, I think, is that this contract, which is the beginning of your addendum, that contract applied for compensation for any interpretive services for any insurance company customers, right?
That's correct.
Is it accurate or undisputed, I guess I should ask, that at this time this contract was signed, your client was only providing interpretive services relative to Blue Cross customers, or no?
That first year of the contract, there was already three different insurance companies that were, I think initially there were three different insurance companies.
And so your client was compensated for Blue Plus only, only according to Schedule A, but for the other interpretive services was not compensated at all or was compensated differently? Or I'm trying to understand what happened then relative to the other insurance company customers.
He has attested and he believes that he was, the first 2 years, he was paid 50% of the revenue for all three of the insurance companies. This was an evolving process. It wasn't like, oh, a third contract didn't kick in until 2010. No, they were procuring insurance contracts from the very beginning. But I think as of at the first year, at the time that they, the first, just in 2007, there were already three different insurance contracts involved. In his testimony,
and
said he was getting 50% of the revenue for all three.
So is his testimony or the evidence that you submitted, I presume you would argue in an affidavit that he submitted, is that right? Or was there deposition testimony also where he said
he was also deposed by the defendant.
Okay, so you're saying that there was or is evidence, admissible evidence, that for the first period of time he was being compensated in accordance with Blue Plus Schedule A payment rates for other insurance customers.
That is what he says in his affidavit.
Okay,
yes.
So that would not be a breach at that point then. So, right, because you're under your theory, he was being compensated as he should be under the contract. Is that right?
During the first 2 years of the contract.
During the first 2 years. And then what does the evidence show that he claims happened later, after the first 2 years? Where does a breach start occurring then?
They were continuing to accumulate more insurance contracts. And again, the original contract did set forth all these other insurance companies and envision.
Right, but where did the breach start then?
Well, why don't I say the breach started after 2009, that Mr. Hastings went to Mr. Hersey and said that the company was not doing well financially and he was just going to pay him a set draw. But now at the same time, he told him that he was paying himself the same monthly draw. And he told Hersey, trust me, Abdi, trust me, the company's not doing well financially, but there's a brighter day ahead. And then that was the story that went forward. Of course, what Abdi did not know was that there's another owner of the company that he had just entered into a stock purchase agreement and promissory notes to buy out the other owner. And our accountant.
Okay, so your claim is the contract was abided by for the first couple years.
The first couple of years.
Thereafter, Mr. Hersey agreed to a draw-based compensation for all insurance customers or only. What about Blue Plus? Did that cover Blue Plus as well?
Well, again, Abdi understood that he was entitled to 50% of the revenue at all times, and he's very clear in his testimony.
Right, okay.
At all times, he understood he was entitled to 50% of the revenue for all the insurance companies.
But what actually happened? That's what we're asking.
What actually
so
happened?
After the first couple of years where he received 50% on all insurance contracts, then he stopped receiving 50% on any insurance contract and instead received a draw?
Well, he did not have access to the tax records, so he was relying upon what he was told by Mr. Hastings.
But what did he understand that he was getting? A draw in lieu, or he was getting a draw, right?
He was told that he would just receive a draw because the company was not doing well financially.
Okay.
And that Mr. Hastings was paying himself the same monthly draw.
So at that point, he didn't believe that he was receiving even the 50% on the Blue Pass contracts.
Well, he did not know what the 50% was because he was not provided the paperwork. One could look back, excuse me.
And then that's why you are arguing a fraud, right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, because it's not, so he understood that compensation changed after a couple years. He previously was being compensated, he argues, according to the contract, and I presume that might have varied over time because it was a changing thing depending on the number of services, I suppose. It wasn't a draw-based.
He was deceived.
And then
there's also what we would say was a breach of fiduciary duty because their contract essentially established a fiduciary obligation to each other. And so when Mr. Hastings was telling him, trust me, Abdi, trust me, we will have better days ahead. The company is not doing well financially. That was a deceit. But Abdi did not know that. And so we
in his view, what was supposed to happen? He was getting a draw, and then how was that supposed to correlate? He understood what all the finances showed, that it was really doing well in his view, the company, and that he should have been getting 50%, et cetera. would he get the draw plus 50%? Or, you know, what was supposed to, how was the draw supposed to figure, factor in?
Well, that was never discussed. Hersey's understanding all the time that he was supposed to get 50%. When Mr. Hastings told him that he was just going to give him a draw when that period started, I mean, Hersey was not happy with that. He was not accepting of that. He never accepted that, but Hastings told him, I'm paying myself the same monthly sum because the company is not doing well financially, and I presume there was this idea that they were investing in the future, that the resources were being put into procuring more contracts and opening up other more places around the business, around the state. Now, we can sit here and say, Abdi, why didn't you demand an accounting? Why didn't you, in 2010, why didn't you demand to have your own accountant look at the tax records? Why didn't you, you know, insist upon an accounting of what the company was doing? Well, that's kind of easy to say in hindsight, looking back, but the reality is that Mr. Hersey is an immigrant from Somalia. He's never been involved in the U.S. justice system before, and he was engaged with a person who he liked, who he trusted, who told him the company was not doing well financially and he should be patient. One can criticize his decision, but that's for, I think, a jury to evaluate whether or not what we don't want to hold Abdi to a standard.
I'm going to have you wrap it up here because you're over your time. You will have more time on rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, may it please the court. My name is William Davidson. I represent the various respondents, Arch Language Network and Russell Hastings. We would ask this court to affirm Judge Janosch's ruling granting summary judgment on the contract claim and all the other various orders that are being challenged here today. Much of the issues before this court, I believe, are, as we set out in our brief and in our arguments, are subject to an abuse of discretion standard of review. And there has been no showing that either the special master, retired Judge Larson, or subsequently Judge Janosch in their various discovery rulings as to the subpoenas, as to the like, was an abuse of discretion. This court should affirm based on those various challenges, which is, as I read things, the bulk of the appellate arguments and the bulk of the arguments set forth in the briefs and much of what we heard today. The arguments as to fraud on the court simply fail. At its heart, it appears much of the fraud on the court theory or strategy that appellant has chosen to pursue and appellant chose to pursue below is a focus on a request for admission regarding who was the owner of Arch Language Network. And that was carefully addressed both by Judge Janosch and the special master.
I think that has been briefed by both parties. Can I ask you to turn to the contract issues, though?
Of course.
Which is, I think, you put first maybe in your brief. Looking at the contract, the district court decided that it unambiguously applied those rates only to Blue Plus. Is customer the right word? I'm not sure what the right word is. But interpretive services provided to Blue Plus. And I've heard from opposing counsel that even at the start of this contract, and I realize that goes beyond the four corners of it, but even at the start of the contract, that there were services provided to other customers. I'm having a hard time understanding if this is the contract that was to provide the compensation rates, and it says it would be based on the Blue Plus, and there's no mention of other compensation rates. I don't really understand how this contract fully incorporates, or maybe it doesn't, you would argue, how he gets compensated for all services that he provides.
And Your Honor, I'll describe it this way, and your recognition of what my argument might be is accurate. This contract, the August 2007 sub-vendor agreement, does not encompass all of their relationship. There were a series of contracts between the parties here. A reminder to the court, Mr. Hersey is not an owner of Arch Network. He is not a partner. He was someone who contracted through a variety of contracts, undisputed evidence. The sole contract that has been the basis of the claim is Addendum 1, the sub-vendor agreement from 2007. Later that fall, I believe, Mr. Hersey entered into a direct independent contractor agreement to provide direct interpretive services. Later in their relationship, there was an agreement as to what's known as the Rehan, R-E-I-H-A-N account, where Mr. Hersey obtained compensation for services that Arch provided on the Rehan account. This contract itself, as Judge Janisch recognized under the facts, was orally modified a variety of times, one of which was almost immediately, you will see through the agreement, I think it's one of the attachments, all of the obligations Mr. Hersey had as a sub-vendor to do certain things, track certain records, submit certain bills. That had to be changed, and it was changed.
Okay, so let me just understand, because I think there are two things, two ideas that you had in that answer. One is that this contract, the first part of the addendum, only related to Blue Plus, and that there were services, well, answer me this, that even at the start of it, were there services that were provided to non-Blue Plus members that were covered by a different contract? Answer that question for me. Is there evidence that shows that, or what do you, what's the...
I don't believe there's evidence that shows that directly, Judge, if I'm understanding your question. Let me...
Because then you also talked about modifying this contract. I'm trying to figure out, are we talking about modification, or are we talking about that? No, there were other contracts from the start. Because what I heard opposing counsel say is that for a couple years, there were services provided to non-Blue Plus members who, which were in fact compensated according to the terms of this contract.
And I don't believe the record will support that assertion, Your Honor.
Okay.
This contract was originally formed, and when originally formed, and the purpose was to deal with the providers that Arch was contracted with, there were two insurers, as I understand it. One was Blue Plus, the other was South SHCA, or SCHA, South County Health Alliance.
Health Alliance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's an organization in southern Minnesota, as I understand it, to which Mr. Hersey had no connection. And that's why this contract was drafted this way, and that's why Schedule A was focused on Blue Plus.
And are you saying then, I mean, is there an allegation that the, I mean, I think that the allegation is, well, I don't know, is there evidence in the record about how compensation was done relative to the South Country, whatever?
There's no evidence in the record as to that, and there's no allegation that I'm aware of, Your Honor, that there was even a breach. But again, as to the contract claim, we're on a Rule 56 standard. Mm-hmm. What's the disputed evidence, if any, genuine issues of material fact, errors of law? I've heard no real argument that there's an error of law, and there's somewhat of an argument as to a disputed issue of fact. But I think when Judge Janisch carefully narrowed this case from originally a 12-count complaint on down and gave appellant the opportunities to submit an evidentiary record, appellant simply failed to meet not only the burden of persuasion, but failed to meet the burden of proof to come forward with admissible evidence establishing a breach consistent with the theory of a breach of this particular contract. This particular contract later then was, undisputed, modified in several different ways. But originally it was designed with Schedule A, the specific controlling the general terms, to just apply to Blue Plus. The arguments that in the main part of the contract it references five or six other insurers, I would simply point out that's in a limitation of liability clause and basically representing there is no warranty being provided as to, for example, any of the data that these various insurers are provided. This is following a HIPAA compliance language in the contract.
Yeah, can you explain to me what is that for? Why? What does that mean that they're processing data from other sources? It lists them, makes no warranties as to the accuracy. Why would the accuracy of that data be even significant to Mr. Hersey if he's not dealing with those claims?
I'm not sure why it was included, Your Honor, quite frankly, but what I can say and argue is that it does not change the specific language of what the compensation would be and what it was designed to be. It is a general description, and it even says, such as, or for example, essentially, information from these types of providers, and it lists a whole litany. That listing of the litany does not in any way, shape, or form say that Mr. Hersey is providing interpretive services through various interpreters that he originally brought in to those companies, nor specifically in any way does it say that if that were to happen down the road, that he'd be compensated at the Blue Plus rates. Undisputed evidence as well, just so that the court is aware, is that the various rates that different providers, whether it be an insurer, whether it be a contract directly with a health provider such as Fairview, varied greatly, all of which undercuts this general late-in-the-game theory of this was a 50-50 partnership. I get 50% of all revenue. A company that grew from $500,000 of revenue to $12.5 million, I get 50% of all revenue. There's no evidence of that in the record, certainly no evidence that this contract, which is the sole contract that's being alleged to have been breached, supports that theory.
And when you reference the modification of this contract, are you then saying that there is in the record evidence that this contract was modified relative to reimbursement related to Blue Plus? You're still in the universe,
yes,
only of Blue Plus customers.
Yes.
Okay. And then your argument is any other insurance company customers that are just simply outside of the scope of this agreement or any of its modifications?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, as to that last part, I apologize.
Okay.
The modification that occurred, as I understand it, 2 years in, again, admitted here today, once again, no breach of contract of this contract during the first 2 years, was that in large part the deal shifted to a flat fee arrangement, which increased over time. And to be clear, Mr. Hersey obtained almost $385,000 in compensation over the 7 or 8 years of their relationship.
So this it changed to a flat fee arrangement even as to the Blue Plus accounts?
Correct.
Okay.
And that, and I apologize, I don't know if the record even reflects this, if that flat fee encompassed other providers as the organization grew and had dealings with other providers. I do know that that flat fee arrangement did not encompass, for example, I apologize, you know, if Blue Plus and then, say, Medica and some other organizations joined in later, if any services that were provided to them, that was encompassed by the flat fee. I don't know if that is the case because I don't think the record reflects that.
So
what I do know is it does not include the Rahan account, and I do know that it does not include the Fairview account, separate deals that were negotiated between Arch and Mr. Hersey.
So if, with respect to Blue Plus, even reading this contract as you read it, that it only applies to Blue Plus, you're saying that a couple years in, even relative to those members, the compensation differed then. It was
orally modified.
It was orally modified.
Yes.
And is that then, if the breach of contract claim is, no, this there was no oral modification. I mean, how is there not a disputed issue of fact about the modification? Modification seems important then to summary judgment on the contract claim. Because it sounds like you're acknowledging there was a change in compensation even related to this contract.
There was a change in compensation. And, Judge, what I think I heard from the question and perhaps what appellant's argument would like to be is that we've stated a claim, a Rule 12 argument, that, yeah, we can assert a breach of contract claim, but that's not what this record ultimately shows. We were on a Rule 56 motion. Respondents, after this case was narrowed on down, setting aside all of the numerous hearings before special masters and discovery disputes. Defendants, respondents brought their summary judgment motion. Appellant brought a simultaneous cross motion, basically for a default judgment, void ab initio, every ruling to date, all of the prior Rule 12 motions, all the prior partial summary judgment motions, based on this fraud on the court theory and this abuse of process type of theory. And as we set forth in the record, respondents opposed that default motion. Appellant did not oppose our summary judgment motion until, on 3 to 5 days before, submitted a 62 or 63-page reply brief, one that Judge Giannis rejected both as overlong and untimely. And when you look at the record that was before Judge Giannis, which includes everything in the record before then, because that's what we do when we look at summary judgment, it's not appropriate, with all respect for this court, to second-guess district courts when they're ruling on summary judgment as to things that are outside the record or that come after the court closes the record. When you look at that record and the arguments, We don't believe that appellant met its burden of production to show a disputed issue of fact as to what part of this contract was breached, whether it's just the written contract or the undisputed evidence as to what the oral modifications of that contract were.
So I guess that's, okay, so if you were, your argument is, I mean, I understand the procedural issues that you're raising, but just generally, the argument is, yes, there was payment for Blue Plus members in accordance with this contract for a period of time. Then it was orally modified, and there's no genuine issue of disputed fact, no genuine dispute of fact, material fact, as to whether it was in fact modified. Correct. And I think opposing counsel would say, yes, that is a disputed fact. That's what should go to trial, is whether this was in fact modified. Is that right?
That will be, I think that's the argument, and that'll be one of the issues before this court. But then recall as well, even if it was modified as appellant contends, there is no evidence in the record to establish what the breach was. We do contend it was modified. But if you take it, their argument, and it's morphed over time, whether it was or was not modified, you can't modify it, I guess it was modified. Whatever their final argument was, as Judge Johners pointed out and as we've argued, there's no evidence in the record as to their interpretation of the contract, how that contract was breached.
Well, they're saying this contract was breached, as I understand it. I mean, I understand that there's been some shifting, but I'm just trying to get where we're at now, which is this contract controls everything, but I'm even going to narrow it to Blue Plus. This contract controls related to Blue Plus. There was no modification. Tell me why that's not a dispute, and therefore this contract was breached. And why is that not, why are there no genuine disputes of fact? I think you would have to say, if in fact they weren't compensated according to this, that that's because it was modified and that's undisputed.
And with permission to answer the question, Your Honor, as my time's expired, yes, there was a modification, and that is undisputed. The course in dealing makes that clear. This arrangement after 2011, when it was orderly modified and there was a draw and an increasing draw over time, increased payments, monthly payments, is undisputed. And so that would be one of our arguments. The rest I'll defer to our brief, and we would ask that this court carefully consider the standard of review. Look closely. I know it's a voluminous record, but Judge Janosch and Judge Larson, in conjunction, carefully addressed these matters and tried to work down to the issues. We would ask that this court to affirm, and absent any other questions, we'll leave it to our briefs. Thank you.
Your Honors, what you just heard was a discussion about a case other than the case that's before the court. He talked at length about all of the modifications to the contract. There were no modifications to the contract. There's Mr. Hastings asserting there were oral modifications, and of course my client vigorously contests that there were oral modifications. This is my client's statement. In the summer of 2011, Hastings and I had a meeting in his office at approximately 10 a.m. After we discussed a number of issues, I asked him, why am I not getting my 50% profit share? I told him, you have been telling me the last 4.5 years, wait, be patient, we aren't doing well financially. I vividly remember his response.
What are you reading from?
I'm reading from his fourth declaration, September 20th of 2017.
And was that, and remind me, was that declaration considered by the district court?
The district court declined to consider it. There were four cross motions before the court at the time.
Okay,
it was before the court. It was, I can give a recitation of all the different reasons. It was before the court.
I was wondering if we just then put a pause on that. Apart from that declaration then, because that's just assume for purposes of argument, we would say, the district court didn't abuse its discretion in not considering it. Where else in the record do you create a genuine disputed material fact?
Every affidavit he submitted. Before the court already, at the very first hearing, he talks about the 50-50 split. Abdi, trust me, please be patient. Better financial days will come. At all times, we both understood that our 50% profit share was intended to apply to all the insurance contracts procured by Arch and not just Blue Plus.
Counsel, and then, so do I understand your position to be that this initial contract was never modified and it provides for 50% profit sharing as to any insurer?
Absolutely.
So it all comes down to that?
Yes.
So we would have to say the district court erred in concluding that this contract plainly applies only to the Blue Pass contract.
Yeah, there's just no evidence to support that. The contract itself references, you know, under data accuracy nonetheless, but it does say those contracts with other insurance, Medica and others, they relate, they are on behalf of the sub-vendor. Abdi Hirsi is the sub-vendor. And getting back to the...
So what your argument is that the addendum describing the payment rate related to the Blue Pass contracts is just sort of a sample, and that same formulation would apply to any insurance contract?
Yeah, he testified in his deposition. He said, and I'm looking for...
I'm just asking you, because what I think we're talking about now is the contract. Is it... ambiguous, or is it clear? If it's ambiguous, how do you read it? I think those are legal arguments, so I'm interested in hearing from you as the lawyer what your interpretation of this contract is to the extent that it's ambiguous.
It's a poorly drafted contract, but it was drafted by an attorney for Arch at the time, who's now currently suspended by the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Doesn't answer my question.
Well, it was
at all.
A poorly drafted contract, and there's clearly a huge dispute over the intent of the contract. And the Minnesota Supreme Court has said when there is a dispute over the terms of the contract, when there's a dispute over the intent of the contract, it is appropriate to have a jury decide that issue. That's all we're asking. Well, let a jury decide that issue. There's also the issues of all of the tort claims that were dismissed as a judgment on the pleadings. At that time, there was already Abdi's testimony about how he trusted Russell Hastings and how he had been told that he should be patient and that he was being paid the same monthly draw as Russell Hastings. And of course, none of that was true. And when they filed their answer, and then their answer to the complaint, and then their answer to the amended complaint, they contested every factual issue. There is case law from this court that says, as a matter of law, when you contest the factual issue in a answer, there cannot be a judgment on the pleadings. Every ruling by the court, respectfully, I've been doing this for a long time, there's error in every single ruling. This is a tough case for me because I sit here and how can I argue 100 different issues? We're saying there's a bit of fraud. Fundamentally, the court can go through every order, and I think I give a summary synopsis for each one as to why there's error. But fundamentally, we're saying I think there should be a recognition that they failed to disclose this owner of the company, failed to disclose the promissory notes. Those all go to explain why Mr. Hastings was misleading Hirsi, because he was using... And our accountant who has reviewed the limited information we got has said it appears likely. That's a presumption. There is a presumption that there was a civil theft that occurred, that Arch money was used to buy out the other owner of the company to benefit Mr. Hastings. Hirsi is...
You're over your time, so I'll give you about the 10 seconds remaining to wrap up.
Your Honors, we'd ask that we just send the case back as a reboot. Let's just start over. Let's serve and file an amended complaint. Let's proceed with discovery. And we respectfully request that the case be sent to the chief judge of Hennepin County to be assigned to a different judge. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you for the arguments and briefing. The case is submitted.